This week, we gather in the cantina to discuss the first four episodes of Bad Batch Season 3. If you're curious about the mysteries of Mount Tantus, Project Necromancer, and Omega's genetic M-count, you found the right watering hole. Because we discuss it all and what it all could mean for the story ahead. Let's go!
First four episodes of Bad Batch Season 3.
Yes.
Very exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Whoopsie daisy. Missed a week there.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough. But you know what? We have more episodes to digest, to discuss. You know? It's might be a great
time. We have somewhat of a completed arc.
A completed arc, for sure. We're kind of the last people to weigh in on Bad Batch, but I'm cool with that because gives us time to absorb and think. And
I mean, we were very tired after the victory lap too, so it's
right,
like I needed time to rest
after all those victory laps.
Yep,
right on.
Yeah, seriously.
No. I mean, we had forecast a long time ago that we may delve into sort of Omega's, you know, role in sort of the cloning of the Kaminoan cloning process and all that sort of stuff. So I can't wait to dive into this with you guys. But first,
I have a take that I don't think I've heard anywhere. Yeah. So we'll get to that too.
All right.
Cool. First,
we actually have news this week. We should talk about new things in the Pantheon.
News transmission.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subspace frequencies.
Yes. I think the most exciting thing we saw was that we got a rumored release date for the Acolyte, which would be June 5th of this year. That's exciting.
And everywhere, that's super exciting. And everywhere that came out has been really good in the past. And all that's ever changed is when those things come out, it's either they got the day of the week wrong or how many episodes are premiering, but it's always right in that week. So I would trust it. Yeah.
I'm always with these shows. Like, I'll believe it's coming out when like StarWars.com posts it. I hoped it would come out this year, but like if they punted to next year,
production and I think possibly reshoots or possibly rewrites, and it's been through a lot of development and a lot of production, a lot of concepting, a lot of probably production design and CG design CG, and the volume of VFX.
Yeah, and the behind the scenes rumors are, and I mean. Never mind. I was going to say something that would probably get into a much longer conversation. Well, hey, I'll say it. Why not?
That's why we're here.
The behind the scenes rumors are about as glowing as I've heard since The Last Jedi. Like, that was the only thing I heard about Last Jedi before it came out, was just like Lucasfilm loves it. They think it's great. There's like very little editing that was needed to get it ready to go. They're offering him 3 more movies. Like, that's the last thing I heard before like I shut social media down and went to go see the movie. And I've been hearing like similar things about the Acolyte. Like seems like the rumors are that they are in love with the Acolyte behind the scenes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's incredible. Yeah. Speak on that. That's awesome. I'm so excited for this show. I mean, I can't wait. Leslie Headland, I feel like, is like one of the greatest out there.
Yeah, such a great story.
Russian Doll. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's a fantastic show.
I have not seen that.
Yeah,
I will check it out.
I can't wait to see the show itself. I just think that there's probably a lot of VFX incorporated in a show like this, and it's just something you want to wait on, you know?
Yeah. Can I ask a sequencing question now? And that question is basically like, where's Skeleton Crew in all of this? For some reason, I thought Skeleton Crew was shot before this was shot. But I guess not, or they decided to move ordering around.
I feel like 2 years ago, remember we saw those really rough, like on the set, like iPhone videos or something of like them with like the young Wookiee and the
you know, High Republic dress and like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I guess at least 2 years ago they've been working on it.
You're right. It was during one of the celebrations. We saw more pictures or like there was a rough, like, behind the scenes of Acolyte and nothing in Skeleton Crew. That's right. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I was getting a little worried about Skeleton Crew.
I'm still worried about Skeleton Crew. That's one that's like, we got a teaser and then nothing. So it's like, I mean, I think they're going to make that.
Aren't you waiting for Disney to pull a Warner Brothers on something or like a HBO Max on something? And like, I just keep waiting for it to happen and be like, yeah, we wrote it off for a loss. It just disappears.
I know.
Wouldn't it happen to Star Wars if it was happened to any Disney property?
Well, think about like, how many times they've had to bring in someone for reshoots and like rewrites. And
yeah,
they felt good about it. But it's like, what if those reshoots make it worse? Like, I'm surprised that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
You know, and this could be something that's like, well, it's not quite what we want. And then now it's definitely not what we want. But I mean, I think that's a tribute to Kathleen and the group over there. They sort of they really have a distinct vision of what makes a Star Wars. And they haven't let us down yet.
No.
Asterisk. And
Andor was incredible. Kenobi, mostly. I know there's I know people are mixed on Kenobi. Yeah. I know there's some fans who are mixed on some of the shows that are aired, but I feel like Andor was just of such high caliber that I'm sure they're sort of looking at that and being like, let's at least make sure the story is sort of layered and sort of complex and intricate to the means that would make George proud and make the Star Wars, the story of Star Wars sort of embellish it in a wonderful way. Yeah.
That's a good point. And I guess the way I would measure this stuff is like, I don't think there's anything I wouldn't rewatch, right? And to me, that means at least it was watchable. Like, even like, I'll just say it, the Book of Boba Fett, probably my least favorite thing that's good happened. Rewatch. And Disney, I know I'm going to rewatch that at some point. And I'm fairly certain I'm going to enjoy that much more the second time through because I can just do what I normally do with any Star Wars or property I like, which is just kind of like zone out here or there when things are happening I don't like and then clue right back in when they're like, I don't know, blowing up a Sarlacc with a sonic bomb.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, like that happened.
Yeah, that's great
Let
stuff.
Us not forget that happened.
There's beautiful storytelling in there. There's some high camp, and then there's just some kids on some candy colored mopeds.
Sure, it's something we had not seen before in Star Wars. So
just something that happens at some point. But it does look like they would actually be great on. I think we said this in the pod, like Coruscant, or like there's so many planets where like that would make perfect sense that's
or like
sort of the American graffiti of mopeds happening in the
like a Nal Hutta or something where there's a lot of neon neon streets.
It's the way they
but other than that great
it's
show.
The way they moved to me it was just like they're just like low power just, there was like the slowest chase scenes I'd ever seen. Usually if like you're on a hover vehicle, it's because it's like agile. These things were like
right. The choppers. They're choppers.
Slow
choppers. I will just say this, and I'll say this as a legit criticism, because we're like we're in the cantina now, we're being a little more looser. Everything about them was bad. They looked bad,
really?
They moved bad, they sounded bad, everything was bad. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in Star Wars, because usually like I'll get one out of the three, like it'll look good and everything else will be bad, or at least it'll sound good. Like I'm not the biggest, like an example of that is I'm not the biggest fan of like the silver ships that the Naboobian silver ships. They're fine. I don't love them. But that sound design in episode two, when that
the N1 Starfighter.
One of the best sound designs, right? Like, so when I see that scene, like I can zero in, I'm like, that sounds amazing. Yeah. For me, but man, when those speeders come on the scene, I'm like, I got nothing to latch on to. Like,
it's a little more forgivable on a rewatch. I think we hyper scrutinized every one of those episodes so hard, it's unfairly. Yeah. Because I don't think they're really meant to be digested that way. I mean, these are long stories and they're meant to be like consumed as a story, but when you break it down to a serial, it's sort of like there's no context and whatever. I don't know,
yeah.
Any hoozle, we got way off the point. Acolyte exists still and may in fact come out this summer, which would be super. In other news that should not be surprising to anyone, Respawn under EA, almost as soon as we heard the announcement of the first person Mandalorian shooter by Respawn, it's over. It's already over. They've canceled the project. So, which is like, that is so on brand for EA and Respawn. Right. Like, just failure to launch. It's like they got a dedicated 10 years of like exclusive contracts with Lucasfilm. They could just have been
two games.
Yeah. Yeah. They could have been, yeah, two games. And it was the same game that they like had two installations of. And it makes me want to cry. But anyways, now that contract's over, there's a bunch of games in development.
Yay.
And but EA is still failing like they always do. So yeah, it's a bummer. I would have liked that game. That was like the lowest hanging fruit ever. And then
Can I ask like a conspiracy question about it, which is, man, is that a loaded term? I used to love saying conspiracy, and now that just feels so loaded anytime you say that. But like part of me is like, do you wonder if they like, I feel like one of two things happened. People on the inside saw that it was about to get canceled and leaked it on the hopes that like you would get like fan whatever and we keep it living. And that's probably what happened, right? Because the other side of it is Respawn itself leaked it to see what fan response was going to be. And if it wasn't strong enough, they canceled it. Like it could go either way.
But
right?
I mean, everyone was positive about that.
Right. I don't know.
That I read
against it.
Yeah. Barf. All right.
Well, we got more games coming. We got Outlaws.
Outlaws
soon. Coming this year.
Look forward
this
to.
Year.
Yeah. Probably at the end of this year. That'll...
December, Christmas time or fourth quarter. Yeah.
Yeah. Eclipse is in the work.
I think the Knights of the Old Republic remake exists somewhere.
It does. It's not dead.
Yeah.
I think I read that.
I read this week. It's not dead.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, and they just, yeah, go ahead.
It's just in contract purgatory and they're trying to figure out like who owns the rights to what. And it's like, it's the game development system's trying. So it like could die. But it's not dead. They're like, no. We just got to figure out some shell companies or something.
They just got to figure out who gets the money. And no one wants to turn the money away. And someone will do. Dark Forces, right? The remaster just came out. The Dark Forces remaster, I think, just came out this week, which I will hopefully not get too drunk and download that and play that after the podcast. As I did, I think last time we podcasted, I downloaded something. Bounty Hunter. Played 5 minutes of that and went to bed. Hopefully Dark Force is a little better. I was gonna say you know what's totally gonna happen with Outlaws? I'm gonna call it on this pod. They always promise these things end of the year, which is perfect for my work schedule because I get like a month where I'm technically off contract. So I like work a little bit, but mostly like that's when I get my game time again. Like I usually like crunch like a AAA game in January. Like that's usually my January.
That's a great January.
And this happened with this happened with Jedi Survivor. It was supposed to come out and then they delayed it till April, which is hell month for me in terms of my job. And I'm just waiting for Outlaws to come out. It's going to come out right in April. Again, I guarantee you it's going to be April 2025. And I'll just be sitting there going, now I got to do it for fun and for the podcast. So I'm like, I'm up at like up till midnight trying to play this game. So I have content to talk about and I want to play it anyway, whatever. Just griping, but guaranteed.
Right on.
I love it. Speaking of games, Adam, didn't you mention you dabbled in some role playing of recent?
I did. I played my first true D&D session last night, which was quite a bit. Which is weird because I'm an uber nerd, but I was talking about this with the people. I did it with this that like, you know, I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s, and it was pre-internet, so like your nerddom was basically forged on whoever was around you and happened to learn stuff. So like D&D was not a thing where I came from. Like I knew what it was, right? Like I knew it was available, but like it just was not, there's no to play it. No one really around me played it. Magic the Gathering was the thing that broke through in my area. So I played a ton of Magic the Gathering. But yeah. So so I feel this weird as a person who totally understands, like I feel like I have that like geek osmosis of D&D. Like I understand all the terms. Like they were laughing at me because I was like throwing out terms. They're like, how do you know what that is? When you ever play D&D? I'm like, I just do.
Yeah.
Like I'm a nerd. but yeah, it was pretty funny. I think I crit. I literally yelled crit success. And they're like, how do you know what that is? I'm like, cause I'm a nerd. And I'm like crit success, natural 20. So, I will just say that my first official role, other than like building character, right? Like my first role in gameplay was a a natural 20. And then later that night, and we only played for 2.5 hours. I rolled 4 natural 20s.
It's an auspicious start.
It almost broke the game.
Yeah.
Let's get
stuff.
Getting me psyched up to play Grant's campaign. I'm just saying.
I'm worried about you in the campaign now.
It was weird, man. I'm usually not. But then my wife, who was playing with me, because we're playing with her, with my, her brother, my brother-in-law was the DM, and his girlfriend and another friend while we were doing it. And so my wife just kept rolling like nothing. So she was just getting so mad at me. She's like, you're sucking up all the good
luck.
Let's see
how you do with the boost setback dice system,
yeah,
which is slightly different.
All right. We'll see. Something's gotta.
There's still D20s, I think.
I think.
And D10s.
Yeah. I think what I've learned is this is why I have no luck in gambling, because all of the luck that was bestowed to me was in Dungeons and Dragons, and I waited to my midlife to start playing it. What a waste.
Oh, man. All right. Well, we'll talk more about the Gambler's Fallacy when we cover the Bad Batch. We had a Casino Royale scene in that. So. In episode 4, so we'll be sure to
cover that
bad dog. And the only other sort of Star Wars news that I thought was interesting at all was we saw Ahmad Best in a mocap suit on Instagram, hashtagging Jar Jar and EA, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So running back some Jar Jar with Ahmad Best, like, I mean, does anyone else heart swoon when they hear that?
Yeah, give it to me, right?
Yeah,
I'm excited to see Jar Jar's post sort of, you know, Republic sort of storyline. Yeah. I feel like he's one of the main characters, you could argue, and therefore his branch of the overall narrative could be very interesting and sort of add a lot of context.
Yeah, definitely.
Totally.
I mean, the only person we've seen write a story about him is Chuck Wendig's Aftermath series. They did like a little offshoot vignette about like a homeless juggling Jar Jar, which is like, it was the saddest ending to any story ever. But
so sad.
You have to think maybe that was just a low point, and maybe he had better times before and better times after. But yeah, I mean, so EA, it could be in a video game, but like you actually get Ahmad Best voicing the character, which would be really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, fascinating. I'm like trying to figure out what it could possibly be. Like EA has a lot of fingers and a lot of pies, but like they have the Galaxy of Heroes game, that mobile game, but they're not doing mocap. They're not doing mocap for that. I don't think that there's no way they're doing mocap for that. And like, what else has EA got? Right? Like, it to me, I'm like, I wonder if they're gonna bring him into Jedi
Survivor,
like the sequel. Like the last time we've seen people in mocap for games in Star Wars land has been the Jedi, like, you know, Cameron Moynihan doing Cal Kestis. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
And I feel like they're much further along than we think in that game. Like, I think they knew they had a hit on their hands. I think they knew this was, I mean, again, it's Star Wars. It's got to be a trilogy. You can't just make two games.
Is this game going to be Jar Jar's trip to the dark side? His voyage to the dark side?
That'd be amazing.
His descent into the dark arts.
Oh, no.
Speaking of conspiracies. Yeah. This could be, that could be it. Because honestly, that game, man, Survivor, that was like not very Jedi-like. He was just, we mentioned this before, but I'm like, every time I think about it, I'm like, man, he killed animals, he killed people.
You know what? I feel like a proper Jedi game, you're just walking around in robes for the majority of the game.
Yeah.
And doing just like, doing a lot of like chat-based, discussion-based.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like conflict.
Maybe some mind tricks or some moving some stuff around, but it's to be like the powers of persuasion and, you know.
And Grant always talks about, you know, just to being like, stealth missions and stuff, right? Like that feels more Jedi.
Oh, that's what I thought that game would be about, is crowds and sort of hiding right.
Do that Assassin's Creed stuff.
Sort of mind tricking your way into areas in a city or, you know.
I love that game.
And city area.
But Ben, I have the same thing. I have this disconnect where I'm like, I'll just start like mowing down stormtroopers after a while. And I'm like, it does not feel like a Jedi to me. Even though I'm playing.
Wouldn't it be better if it was like the Hitman games where you basically have to like hide in the crowd?
Yeah, totally.
Like, to me, that's like, oh, that's all. That's post-fall. That's what a Jedi would have to do.
That should be the Mace Windu game.
Let's do that.
Yes.
Like Mace Windu episode 2 or episode 3, right? Like he's like
in the fall, like
hiding in Coruscant, moving his way through Coruscant, just getting up levels. Like that's the whole game. It's basically like the raid video game, but it's
I really want a game that's like that really goes into the air speeders on Coruscant.
Yeah,
basically is GTA with verticality, you know what I mean? Love like it. Something where it's the air speeders up and down, move them around, get crazy.
Did
with
anyone
it.
Read the Esquire article with Samuel Jackson with his lightsaber. Like he had like had like another photo shoot with his purple lightsaber, and it was like an interview with him, and he's just like wanted to swing a lightsaber in his like photo shoot, and they're like, "That's great. I love that guy. I love that guy."
Could
so
you
much.
Do a sort I of? Know. Could you do a Mace Windu a story in which like? Could you do a Mace Windu story in which like he is recollecting his time as a Padawan and a knight and a young Jedi and sort of like, but it's actually Sam Jackson, possibly de-aged, possibly in the council room or something.
I could see one where he lost his hand and he's like, oh, so you want to go dark side? He's like, I'm going to disappear into the shadows and you won't see me until it's too late. But of course, then he has to do something, you know, him being like, all right, I'm going to fight the dark side on its terms and like, I'm going to stay hidden and elusive and then like, and strike when the time's right. Right. I don't know. There's a million ways to take Mace Windu because he is like dark side curious.
Totally. And I think you're right, Grant, like in terms of the DH stuff. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw he looked great in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the Marvels, the recent,
I mean, he looks great now for a 80-year-old man.
Oh my gosh. That's what I mean. He's such a treasure. And it's like, while we have these Maybe people and they're like eager, like, why not just milk it for a little bit more?
Yeah.
You know, stuff. Anyhoozle, that was news.
He looks great. More Mace Windu stories. I know we're getting them. That got the comic.
Yep. We got Mark Bernard in here. Yeah.
I loved the first.
Can't wait for that comic. That's going to be so great.
Maybe it's the. Mark Bernard and the writer basically created NOS, like Fast and the Furious, in the Star Wars galaxy. And it's very exciting.
It's awesome.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Should we get into the Bad Batch season 3? I mean, sheesh. We're a week behind.
Let's do it.
As we arrive, we have Omega in prison in Mount Tantus under the watchful eye of Dr. Hemlock. Nala Se and the Wings, and a bunch of scientific experiments and cloning going on up in this piece. We have a dejected Crosshair and Omega in the same place. We know Omega's captor. I'm forgetting her name right now, but I think I have it written here. I'll never remember it.
Oh, Emery?
Yeah, Emery. Dr. Emery. Yeah. She
kind of great character.
Reveals she's also a clone.
Yeah, let's talk. Can we talk about that detail first?
Let's go. I love this.
She reveals she's a clone. She's a clone, essentially, of Django, just like everyone else. Yeah. But she was taken to another facility by Hemlock, and then obviously came here.
Yeah.
But just interesting to think that Emery and maybe other clones, possibly high IQ, possibly M count. High M count, like we're sent to some sort of facility to work with
Hemlock. Yeah, and I'm not going to go, you know, sequentially through these episodes because it's just not how I'm feeling right now. But it is revealed that Project Necromancers Ground Zero is in Mount Tantus, and it doesn't take long for the Emperor to show up and just check on whatever's in these pods and what Project Necromancer is, and we know that. You know, Omega's part of that and the Zillow Beast's part of that and maybe everything's part of that. But that's huge. I mean,
It's major.
It is. Yeah.
This is
it's
major lore like, right now.
It's confirmation that we're like officially tying in like stuff from the Mandoverse. I mean, Project Necromancer was name checked in season 3 of the Mandalorian, right? During the Fractured Empire's Skype meeting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So we have that first episode confined where Omega's basically imprisoned and going through the complex and finds this.
We see her routine.
She is sort of her best friend or becomes her kind of another companion to the batch.
Those hounds are called Lurkas
in the season.
Lurkas.
Yeah. Nice. And her favorite one.
Lurkas?
Lurkas. Yo, I had such problems with her accent. I thought her favorite Lurka's name is Batcher, but I thought she was saying Betcha, like Betcha, whatever. Right, and I was like, I'm like, that's a weird name, but okay. But it's Betcha.
Batcher.
It's Batcher.
I adore her accent. I could listen to her read the phone book. I love it. I love it. So everything she says, I'm just like on it. I adore that.
Shout out to Omega. Michelle Ang. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just killer. But yes, don't understand any of the, like, it was hard enough that they have all these weird names, but then.
Anyways, it was all about saving Batcher in that first episode. Then the second episode, Hunter and Wrecker are in search of Tantus. We actually get a new, like, criminal syndicate or sort of like.
What?
Maybe not a syndicate, like a family, I guess, a Deveronian sort of like.
Right.
Family. So we saw that guy with the cut off horn. He was in season two.
Okay.
Actually, let me see if I have his name here. I don't. But yeah, we saw him there. He lost his horn in like a fight.
Well, the queen is Queen Durand. And so I think this is the Durand sort of like family.
Right. Right. Yeah. Durand.
Some sort of monarchy of some kind.
It was like. They're fighting against the pikes, and it was, remember, it was that heist with the pikes, and they fall into like a wasp's nest. That's where, got greedy, something.
Ben, you're gonna kick yourself for not knowing this Deveronian's name. It's Roland Durand.
Oh, for heaven's sake!
How do you forget Roland?
I know. A little nod to the child Roland.
Yeah. Dark Tower comes.
To the Dark Tower where he rides. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roland. I love that name.
It was incredible. Just them standing on the sort of like the light barrier, the bridge that the comprised of sort of a laser. That was so cool.
And the armor, the Deveronian armor was awesome too.
Yeah. Like
the face mask over the horns was so cool.
Very cool. Queen Durand, voiced by Angelica Houston.
Oh, no really? Way. Look at that.
Thanks, Angelica.
That's right there.
The funny thing is they bury the guest star names in the back because it's because they always say like the big names at first, and it's always like because like it was Ian what's his name, the Emperor was the Emperor, like his voice was
Ian McDermott.
And it took me forever, like, because those go by so fast. I'm like, wait, pause. Oh, wait,
I know.
No, go back to seconds. Pause. To get those, like, I'm like, you have amazing guest vocal, like, voices, and they just, like, go by in a millisecond. It's wild that they don't, like, take, like, the actual card moment to, like, shout out who they're getting.
And I've got to start watching the credits, because I haven't the past few times. I've just been, like, so excited to get through them. But usually I do watch specifically for this. Turns out, like, Daniel Logan was one of those, like, children, things.
Oh. He was doing the voice.
So they find the weight of Tantus, and they meet these clones that are in the jungles there. And this is what I love about the new sort of canon take on Mount Tantus, is that it's blending in sort of the clones from the Clone Wars and sort of making it rooted in cloning technology. Yeah. Like the facility and the planet almost stands for it in a lot of ways. So cool. Like, really loving the new canon approach to this location.
Yeah, me too. This also, let us not forget that this episode featured a gonk being strapped to a gonk playing a serious role.
Oh my god! I know, like, all he was like an iPhone charger, but he's like weighs like 200 pounds. It's giant.
Put him on Wrecker. Yeah,
that I thought that was a really funny bit, and Wrecker's like, okay, and like poor gonk's upside down.
A little behind the scenes, I was watching this on a plane ride. I had downloaded them, and I was watching it on a plane ride, and I now hate watching things on planes. Because I just notice other people watching what I'm watching, and I get very like
self-conscious.
Stay in your own lane.
Like definitely watch that scene with you first.
I mean,
I'm bored.
Was I judging the 21-year-old next to me who was watching Oppenheimer on an iPhone? Yes. Yes, I was. So I'm guilty of it too. And then, by the way, this kid followed this up with, any guess? I will give you $1,000 if you can guess the next movie he followed Oppenheimer up with.
Oh, it's a movie? I was going to say Love is Blind, but...
Lawrence of Arabia on the iPhone.
Citizen Kane.
No. Austin Powers, International Man of Mystery. Yep. You know, the classic.
Just running through the classics.
The classic double feature.
Oppenheimer followed by Austin Powers.
International Man of Mystery.
I did not plan on talking about that. It just popped back in my brain when I was talking about this. So anyway, I was self-conscious. So and then by like halfway through episode one, because I was sitting there in the window, like hanging in the window, just holding my iPad like this so no one could see what I was watching, which then also makes you look like, wait, what is he watching?
What is he watching now? It's right. Like, all right.
But I got so into this, and as I'll probably say this for the last time because it's the last season where I'm like, I always forget how much I love The Bad Batch until I start watching The Bad Batch again. Like, I was just like, as I, it feels at first like homework, and then I'm like, oh no, this is a spectacular storytelling and directing. Anyway, I got there, like, I got so sucked in. I was just sitting there, like, fully watching this cartoon while everyone else was around me and not caring because it just draws you in. And then,
yeah.
Those clones are voiced by Daniel Logan, right? The young
just
clones.
So Max is, okay. But Deke and Stack have different voice really? Actors. So it's Deke, okay. Stack, and Max. Oh, okay. And Max is
why
Daniel.
Would you do that?
I think we're starting to show some variation here.
Well, yeah. And I guess also, like, he's not a voice actor as, like, Dee Bradley Baker mm-hmm. is. So it's a little, he might not be as easy for him to differentiate. Yeah.
And I don't know who the voice actors are for Deacon Stack. I just know it's just Max for Daniel Logan.
Interesting.
Which is fun. I mean, it gives each character a little more nuance. It makes it a little more colorful. I mean, there's a million things to talk about in especially these first three episodes. I feel like, and maybe it's just me, you guys need to tell me if I'm right, in the right here, or if I'm seeing it skewed, but do you feel like Filoni watched Andor and now just wants to make Andor a little bit? Like, I just, like, the sound design, the, like, some of the other designs.
So good. Sound design is incredible. The music, if you're watching the show, headphones on. It's,
yeah.
Yeah.
The music, like, the tone, it's like a very, like, the cloning, I feel like when they're in the dark side, like cloning facilities, it's like it just has a very Andor vibe to me.
Yeah, I mean, I want to answer that in two ways. One, yes, but you didn't have to wait until The Bad Batch because we all saw Mandalorian season 3 with his attempt of doing that on Coruscant, that episode.
Yeah, this even more so to me. Like, maybe so that's he's closer to the say. Mark now. Yeah,
I was gonna say, like, this feel like I think he's gotten to the tone. Like, I think I told you, like, the preview for the season, like, my wife saw, because I had to watch it for the podcast. She's like, is The Bad Batch good? I'm like, yes, we should watch it. And now I'm even more like, I watched these first, like, four episodes, and I'm like, Carly, we have to watch The Bad Batch. Like, these four episodes were, like, there's a moment in that first episode where they keep cutting to, I guess, what would be commercials if they're commercials, with the turning of the wheel of the sample.
Yes.
Is so deftly genius. Done. Yeah. Like, yeah. I was like, I'm like, I can't imagine last, I can't remember that. Last time I was this
ticking clock.
Yeah, like, such a great way to do it in a cartoon. Again, not to, like, downplay a cartoon, but, like, but, you know, for, like, something that started out where, if you look, like, go all the way back to the first episode of Clone Wars, which is fine, but you're like, you have, like, the annoying baby Hutt and still figuring out. And it wasn't that's that cute. Filoni was. Oh, God.
Stinky.
It wasn't. Oh, God. It wasn't that Filoni was bad. It was just like, okay, these are cartoons, so I got to put, like, a kid element in, right? Like, that was his, like, he was trying to figure
but
out.
But I also think that element's finally paying off.
Yes.
Because
this is the way to do it.
I think what you're talking about, Ben, is, like, the cloning intrigue and the sort of dialogue and rhythms, you know, that surround those scenes where it's like Nala Say throwing away the samples. And now I think the young, you know, child character in Omega, or I guess she's now actually slightly older in this season with, like, a ponytail and, like, probably entering her teenage years. Like, she's paying off because it's sort of like, why are you throwing away my samples? Asking these innocent questions about the sort of samples being thrown away, why they're lying, all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, this is actually really good. This is the sort of lore that's going to involve this character that I care about, is sort of her talking to Nala Se, her involvement in the cloning process, what she means to everybody, all that sort of stuff. And they're finally getting into this part of the story. And I feel like this is where Omega is, I guess, hopefully was, you know, plotted in the blueprints from the beginning to sort of get to this sort of part of the storytelling, really, with it's like young kid asking innocent questions about what's going on, who am I, having the identity crisis that you think they would be sort of a special clone, really.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And the other thing is, it's trusting in its audience. And what I mean by that is, like, we're obviously the audience, a bunch of, like, you know, men in their, like, 30s and 40s. But, like, but I would watch this with my daughter, maybe not now. Though I'm kind of actually thinking about this, I may actually watch this with my child at some point, and I'll explain why in a second. But, like, we're getting to the Pixar level storytelling where Pixar figured out pretty early, like, kids are actually pretty sophisticated, and can watch things and understand things at a level. Like, one of my daughters, who's 3 and a half's favorite movie is Turning Red, which is not like the most action gripping movie. Right. It's about a girl in Toronto in the early 2000s, and it's a metaphor for getting her period.
Right.
It's also a wonderful film. Like, that's what I like, that I could watch with her every time and enjoy it. But like, she loves it, right? Like, she could, something about it connects. It's probably a giant red panda is the thing that makes her love it. But like, you know, kids get it. And I think that like learning that you don't need to tell childish stories to get kids involved, but to put a kid at the center of this, to put a child at the center of this, you're going to connect with children and parents, because boy, as my kid starts getting like more cognitively there and be able to have conversations, watching Omega in Danger is getting harder and harder for me, because it's really easy for me to put my child's like mentality on her.
Right.
But anyway, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, I think it, you know, if you were bumping against the show because you thought it was just sort of a kid's show, there was a lot of like adventurous sort of like good old fashioned adventure happening. But now I think the Omega character is actually kicking into a more serious gear, and that it's just, it's all coming, you know, paying off now.
She's going to be the mechanism for a character's redemption arc, which is beautiful storytelling. And we'll talk about that in episode.
And it's perfect. Like, it's very cyclical. Like, I'm really excited by you know, Filoni's process.
Should we get into some of the like core things to this show now? I mean, there's two questions I'm very much interested in. One regarding Omega's blood, the other is what's in those necromancer vats. Either one of those y'all want to comment?
Those are the two questions.
Those are the two big ones.
So anyone want to weigh in on the two most?
Like, just thought, let's bring it back. Let's bring it back to some on the really real.
Start with what I think is the, I was going to say easiest, but I think the one I'm most sure about, let's put it that way, of the two, which is what's in the necromancer pods.
Yeah.
And that's dead Jedi. That it's like we saw him in Obi-Wan.
Oh, like the ones that are in Amber. Inquisitorious thing. So he's going to try to bring them back to life?
Or he's just using them for midichlorian harvesting, right? Like, this is where we get the midichlorians that we're putting into the blood to test to see if they are compatible with the blood. Which I think is what's happening, which also answers question number one a little bit as well. Like, I think those two things are connected. I could be wrong. I mean, this also might be the area in which we get Asajj Ventress, where they might figure out that she's in one of those pods dead, and they're able to resurrect her. I mean, it's necromancer. It's necromancy, which is like magic surrounding the raising of the dead, right? Like, so.
Yeah, I just thought it would involve, you know, it's
I could be wrong, too.
It's about keeping the Emperor alive forever. And I guess it's like, if you can reanimate a Jedi, you could reanimate the Emperor. But I figure like he wants his soul and purpose and all that stuff there as well.
So here's my, do I hear like my overarching grand theory of this whole thing?
Yeah.
So they're basically trying to figure out, I think, again, total speculation, is that they're trying to figure out how to put. So my theory is that when you put midichlorians into blood, it's just like a blood transfusion. They just die or go away. Uh-huh. And they're trying to figure out what blood is compatible through all of this cloning techniques, where if you put midichlorians in, they stay alive, because that's the Emperor's plan, is to transfer himself into a cloned body. Right. And so Omega broke it. So Omega's not, she's not force sensitive, but if you add midichlorians to her, she has the force, which leads me to my next amazing storytelling. If you could do this, if you could flash forward to Omega at some point getting the force through a blood transfusion, imagine what that character would be like at Luke's temple. This kid is just like, you're not a natural Jedi. You were created, but like, imagine that. She's storytelling, like a clone and just Jedi, having to be like, but no, I really am. I have the force. And just like this person
just
who
like
is like
everybody
outcast.
Else.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's my overarching. Well,
All
right, Grant, I know you have thoughts. I want to hear them as well.
Was Luke a stringent Jedi like the old order, or how did he run his temple?
I don't know. I think Luke would be accepting, but I think the kids would bully the hell out of her. I think it's the kids bullying her. She's a mudblood to bring in someone awful. storytelling into
Grant,
this.
Do you have any on those two points? Do you have any theories?
I've heard the Asajj Ventress theory a few times. The Amber I like a lot. I haven't heard that. It's the logical sort of Occam's razor approach. It's like we saw them in Obi-Wan. We know the process.
We're trying to pull everything together.
Timeline. This is right for them to be harvesting Jedi somewhere secretly. Why not Mount Tantiss? And Mount Tantiss also in Legends history was a place in which, you know, Jedi were cloned.
Right.
I part of me just wants like a weird strand cast that's just like, you know, like a homunculus or something, like something that's just like barely a figure, or like
a bunch of Snokes.
I don't know, something that's just like, I don't know. By that, to me, that's like, I dial up the horror, dial up that these guys are not okay.
Right?
Yeah. That's, I mean, my basic brain was just like, they're either Snokes or actual emperors, like just him.
Yeah, like Strange Cast, totally, the earliest Strange.
They totally could be. Like, that is, I think that's legit. I don't think any of us are, anything we're saying is more or less likely at this point, right? I think all of these are equally likely.
It's still early days. I mean, this is the first year of the reign of the Emperor. So it's like, I would say his first attempt would be like, let's just make me again. Actually, I think there'll be Matt Smith's, right? Like young him.
I was literally going to say Matt Smith's as well.
I would love Matt Smith's.
Just like a bunch of Matt Smith's. Matt. Yeah.
That's all I want. Right. Now.
Because that's what I'd do. I'd be like, oh, I want the younger, perfect version of me. It's like still all genetically the same, but I want to be 22 forever or whatever. And yeah.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, Giancarlo Esposito's character.
Moff Gideon.
Moff Gideon. He made himself first.
Right.
And then.
And he cracked the he cracked the force.
Because we know after a while, like he created like an embryo, which created a strand cast son, and that Rey was born out of that son's progeny. So it's like at some point he got super desperate and was like, I don't know, let's just start making whatever and see if these things that I make like bear children, you know. So that's another 40 years later, like that happens 30 plus years later. So. We're not close to that.
So and I've talked about the fact that I think like the biggest issue with the sequel trilogy is that they waited 35 years to make a sequel trilogy, which was out of their hands, right? So like that's why I'm just very forgiving of it, because like you can't fix that, you can't change that. But like a possible like benefit of this is I kind of love the idea that for 40 years in the galaxy, they've been trying to crack this problem. Like, I love this long term. They've got certain things moving forward. Moff Gideon got there. Then maybe they lost that because that whole place was like,
with the Empire.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just love it that like all this thing's happening and then the Empire crumbles. So they have to like redo it. And then like you get all these like different like sects of the Empire trying to figure out their own way. Like, it's so we're almost starting to bring in the mad science stuff, and I'm like, give me more mad science in the Star Wars universe or galaxy.
Wild. There's so much good stuff in here. I wanted to talk about hands, two hands in particular. One is Crosshair's right hand.
Yeah,
and I had thought about, I'm like, what is the significance of his twitchy right hand?
Mm-hmm.
But then I started really thinking about it, and I think this goes back to Adam's call at the beginning of Bad Batch, where this is sort of like this whole show is about the end of the clones and the beginning of the stormtroopers, and like what happens when you move on, and it, like it makes so much sense that like. Crosshair, you know, the other people, the other members of the Bad Batch were able to use their skills to evolve and become the next thing.
Yeah.
But Crosshair is a murderer. He is a sharpshooter. He's a killer. And I think, you know, like the reason he didn't like join them, you know, his chip didn't go off, but he stayed with the Emperor, is because it's like he has no place in the galaxy other than being a killer.
Right. Yeah.
And like, this is who he is. And then it's only now because of this, I forget why his hand shaking. It's like a genetic something. I really don't care what the reason was behind it. But the whole thing is now he's being forced to like confront, like, well, what if I'm not even that? What if I can't be, you know, like a sharpshooter and I can't do those things? What am I going to become? And this is him sort of being like, well, what comes next? What comes after?
Yeah. And I had an interesting thought about that, because I had the same thing. Like, they keep calling it genetic or whatever. He's like, whatever. Part of me is like, is it genetic or is it psychosomatic?
Oh,
right. Like, is it part of him just that. like he's now starting to like his empathy and sympathy starting to kick in, right? He's starting to, because it only, like, we, you know, this idea of, like, he's starting to realize, like, what he's done, right? And he's getting closer, and we get at the end of episode four, like, I love this idea of, like, there's fear in Crosshair at the end of episode four, because he's talking about the fact of, like, he says to her, like, you don't even know if they're still alive. And that's one of the best scenes, because part of what he's saying is, what am I going to say to them if they're still alive? Yeah, like, there's this moment where, like, he's almost worried they're still alive, because he has to confront.
He should be worried.
He should be. And, like, and we're going to get that. And I love that. But, like, so part of me is just like, I think they're going to go genetic, but part of me is like, make it psychosomatic. Make it like it's in his head, right? Like, he's just so, like, he's starting to come awake. Yeah.
I mean, it's also just an old trope for any kind of gunslinger character.
That's totally.
Either Child Roland.
Three fingers.
But at the same time, I think there is a sort of psychological element to it, because he's only ever pulled that trigger finger. Like, he's only ever pulled the trigger. There's even scenes where Wrecker or Hunter, like, pushes gun out of the way as it fires. Like, he's just always pulling the trigger and trying to take out the target. And I think after seeing his, you know, his brothers get shot right in front of him, and sort of, like, realizing the clones are expendable, and then killing that guy, and just in season two, which was an incredible episode, the sort of Crosshair turn sort of stuff that happened in before, it's like, it's so cool that I think he's now, like, you know, my weapon could decide the fate of the entire Bad Batch team. Mm-hmm. Hemlock, I might theorize at this point, maybe he is the one who, you know, lays the final shot on our big bad here something at some point.
Because I think you're right.
Seems like
I think that's what's going to happen. I think we have to also lose the knowledge a little bit of whatever's gained in this season of knowledge and cloning. We got to lose it, right?
And, like, ends with a cross.
Here's the thing. What I love is we're getting a redemption arc, and there's part of me, I love a redemption arc in Star Wars. That's what Star Wars is built around. In some ways, but what's great is, I mean, the original trilogy does it so well, because you start like all of Empire is just Luke knowing his father can turn back to good, right? Like, I love that. It's still so good, even though there's, like, that shows, that movie's clunky. But to be fair, like, you don't get a ton of, like, Vader redemption in that. You get a couple of scenes where you can see he's starting moving that way. And again, it's different forms of storytelling, but I'm loving that we're episode 4 of 12, 13?
I have no idea.
Something like that. And we're already, the Bad Batch is back together again. I did not expect that to happen by the end of episode 4. I thought there were going to be a couple of misadventures and gets us halfway through the season, and then they're all back together again. So, like, I love that we're going to take long form storytelling to get his redemption. My fear is that we're going to get what we get in every Star Wars redemption arc, which is the character needs a sacrifice play, which is fine. But I really would like one time in Star Wars.
What if it's a trading places thing with Tech they recover Tech, but it's sort of like, maybe Crosshair has to stay behind as they, you know, rescue Tech.
Yeah, he makes the decision on his own to stay back and save his brother. Yada, yada, yada. And the reason why I'm yada, yada, yadaing that is because, like, it's good storytelling, but can we just finally get a character in Star Wars who has to live with the decisions he's made, right?
Yeah. To answer your question, Adam, there are 15 episodes, and the last one is going to air on May the 1st.
Huh? Couldn't push it back 3 days, but no, that's perfect.
Apparently not. And they are going to do another two more times are going to be double episode releases.
Okay.
Six and seven, and 11 and 12.
Not next week, but the week after. All right.
Yeah.
I guess next week, for those of you listening to this on Monday.
They have episode titles for all of them.
All 15? Really?
Yeah.
All
right. Do you want to hear?
Yeah, they do.
Do you want to hear them?
Sure. I'm not going to speculate this time because I was so off last time. But go ahead.
All right, earmuffs, everyone else. All right, episode 5, The Return.
All right.
6, Infiltration. 7, Extraction. Infiltration and Extraction are going to be released the same week. 8, Bad Territory. 9, The Harbinger. 10 and 11 are together, right? So Identity Crisis, Point of No Return. 12, Juggernaut. 13, Into the Breach. 14, Flash Strike. 15, The Cavalry Has Arrived. So very generic terms. Other than Infiltration and Extraction, can we talk about those?
Yeah.
What are they going to infiltrate, and what are they going to extract? Everyone in Mount Tantus?
But they're extracting tech.
Oh, from Tantus?
Yeah. Again, that's not what's happening.
Is the return the return of tech?
No, the return is the return of Crosshair.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, I think. Yeah. But again, if I say it, it's not true. So I've ruined it for everyone. It's Schrodinger's cat. I've accidentally opened the box and the cat's dead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I have to imagine it's the cloning complex.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, because Omega wanted to go back. She's like, we got to set them free. And
yeah,
like Crosshair's like, absolutely not. And I was like, absolutely not. When she said that, I was like, no, I'm with Crosshair on this.
Deborah's also
I was like, yes, you do. You definitely have to go back and rescue them all.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is like, I guess this place is going to stay, you know, in business because the Emperor is like watching over it, mm-hmm. and comes there and talks to Hemlock firsthand and sort of makes an appearance in a major way in that third episode. Yeah. I was like, the Emperor has eyes on Tantus. I have to imagine he may intervene in some way later.
Yeah.
And I like that he's almost being teased as the main villain, like a partial villain in this season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Much like Vader in Rebels, it's sort of like, is there going to be more Palpatine later? Will he show up to defend his cloning, you know, facility?
It would be great to see the Emperor go house on like a bunch of like troopers.
Yeah, you could see him pulling that, right? Just deciding to just like force lightning all of the remaining clone troopers.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, that would be a poetic way for the clones to die, which is sad, but you know, like that makes like kind of sense because that's what the show's about, right? It's like the death of the clone.
Yeah. Travis just is here.
Travis,
yeah,
that welcome.
He nice. Thought maybe the return Sunday. Could be the Ventress centric episode, right? The return of Ventress, which just makes sense,
right?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned that it could be someone in those vats. They also did flirt with that mystery character from the trailer. We saw one scene with them. I think she was like the character was like getting in a like lift or something.
Mm.
It was like on Tantus. They just showed up for like one scene.
Yeah.
But I'm this like they're in like black armor. Right. It's kind of like Crosshair. But I'm wondering if that's actually a clone of Ventress, like that maybe they weren't able to pass all the midichlorians along on to.
Yeah, she
but
can.
They just made one anyways for science. I don't know, but they just it felt Ventress like but I'm curious about that. That's the thing that I'm most interested in
this that moment. Is interesting, and there is something to be said about going back to Tantus for episode 4, because episode 3 is interesting, where it's just like, or episode 5, I mean, so because we just saw episode 4. Episode 4 is interesting because 95% of that entire show is Omega and Crosshair. And they cut back for like one scene in Tantus where it's just like, I love it. It's like, cause you're watching a scene. It's like, don't forget this is happening. Like clearly they're going to always cut back to Tantus at like once an episode.
I have a feeling the themes here are trust and friendship and in the best ways possible though, in this show, because I think Omega lets everyone in and wants to help everyone. And Crosshair is hesitant to trust anyone at this point. Is jaded on absolutely everyone.
And he's ashamed.
I think Crosshair at some point has to see that Hunter and Wrecker are there for him. That's the difference that they play in his life, is that they will show up and protect him if he's, you know, trying to evac somewhere or something. And he's like, oh, that's what these guys are. They've got my back. They're
I think he always knew so that, but it was like, it was his ancient brain that was just out for self-preservation caused him to make some bad decisions because... He had a lot of change in his life and it's still going on, and he dealt with it badly. But now he's like, I think it makes, you know, sense in the story for him to come back around.
Yeah.
And be like, and
I think he could live with his consequences.
Yeah.
So I think they could have.
If he's forgiven for them, you know, he probably doesn't forgive himself, but it would take one of his friends being like,
That's what I'm saying. That's the power of these moments, though. And I think Omega, it's just pure heart and she can.
And that's the thing, having Omega there, right? Like I have no doubt that forgiveness will be there because Omega will require it.
Right.
Demand it. Yes, exactly. The other thing I was going to say is that I think Crosshair, I'm not trying to like justify his behavior, but I think he honestly believed that the Bad Batch were done if they didn't go with the Empire. Right. And then he saw what what the Empire did and realized he was wrong. But he still needs to admit it. The other thing I want to say is that, like, it's kind of reflecting back to this, like, the subtlety of the storytelling is, and check my math on this because I'm not 100% on it, but it seemed to be the case, is that Batcher is, he keeps referring to Batcher as that thing, your animal, your pet, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And it's right in the episode, he's like, all right, bring Batcher in here. He finally refers to Batcher as Batcher, right? And it's a real subtle moment where I'm like, oh, it's a nice way to make him coming around, right? Like, he's like, the thing is named now. This is our pet. Like, clearly, I can talk to it that way. I also, one of my favorite things in storytelling is when you have a, what's the word I'm trying to say, a mandatory line, meaning that there's no other line that could be written. Do you know what I'm saying? And that's when she's like, he's like, I can't believe you made it. How'd you make it? And they literally went, I had help. Right? Like, there was no other line that could possibly be written there. And that's one of my favorite things in storytelling is when you've written people into a position where, like, literally the entire audience would just say, I had help. Right? Like, knows what the next line is because it's so powerful. And that's when I might have started to cry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Same here.
Was that the crosshair?
Yeah, the end
of episode four. Yeah. I'd love to talk more about episode four in general, too, because it was a really, really cool episode. They're on, you know, Lao. And I think it's called A Different Way. And, like, the moral of the story is that, like, you know, Crosshair is learning to do things in a different way on missions, right? Like, it's not shoot first on everything, which sort of falls in line with my theory about his hand and all that, right? And you know, he has to be with Omega, and Omega is choosing these different ways to go. But none of them work, by the way. And ultimately, Crosshair just shooting them out of the situation was the only thing that actually solved that mission.
Yeah.
So,
don't be trusting.
They're learning from
sometimes
each other.
You can't save everyone.
Yeah. Why waste all that time when you can just shoot your way out of a situation?
It's very true. The other thing about episode four is, again, this isn't a cartoon that is like, I don't think it's Y7, but it's like maybe PG, maybe it's YP, whatever. It's like, you know, it's whatever. Yeah. They get into the intricacies of grift in a bureaucracy.
Yeah.
where I was watching this going, okay, I love the scene where she's playing with the Imperial officer, and he at the end he goes, okay, well, there's the matter of the fine you owe. Yeah. And I watch this going, oh, he's going to demand all of the money back. And when he says the fine is 10,000, pays it, great, we have 35,000. Then they run into the kid, 5,000. It was so much fun watching that, where it's just like, you like to write that subtly of just like slowly bleeding money to bureaucracy and grift is so funny.
Yeah. Sometimes both at the same time. Yeah, it was great.
I love those cantina, the gambling scenes. I thought they were so awesome. And the lighting, again, I can't compliment the lighting enough. And then the Imperial Colonel or whoever comes in there is just a fun character to bring in and have Omega play.
Yeah, I don't even know if he was named, actually. I didn't look to check him out.
Yeah, I do wonder who the voice actor was. And
yeah,
I really,
it was probably another like really well-known name, but I know, I love that too. A little Casino Royale, because I forgot, like, they did sort of a lot of the time spent in Sid's bar on Onderon. Is that where they are? Port Mandel. Yes. That, you know, she was playing games in a bar, you know, she's playing all the card games. So it makes sense that she was like, and she was always, I think, beating all of them, if memory serves.
Yeah.
And like holo chess and like all that stuff. So that was a fun bit. Except she was like, I think I'll quit while I'm ahead, which no one ever says in any of those, like, you know, gambling movies or like,
right.
Ever. That was super fun. There's mud troopers. We get to see. I think I've been paying a lot more attention to design and like unique design.
Oh, the designs in this show are so good.
The phase one
stormtroopers, like all the those everything in this show is like, this is my favorite basically armor design in anything Star Wars since, you know, 2015. Yeah.
I think we get early mud troopers too, like the ones that Han Solo is wearing in the Solo movie, where they have sort of like armor over the armor, and they have goggles that go over their goggles.
Yes, I saw that.
And I was like, that's stupid. I love it.
I'm so stupid. Yeah, I loved it. It was such a cool silhouette.
Yeah,
like on their head.
And the the like cloaks over the armor. I mean, I'll go cloaks over armor so cool. any day.
It looked like Ralph McQuarrie. It was Phantasmacore.
Totally.
The
bartender. I thought the droid bartender was an amazing design.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one was really great. And the like new armor for Crosshair, like always having undefeated armor. It was like a Chicago Cubs hat with like a pool noodle wrapped around his head. Like, but it was like still awesome. Really?
What about Scorch? We didn't talk about Scorch at all. Did you guys play the Republic Commando games?
No.
No, I did not. Yeah, way back.
Scorch was like one of the characters, I guess, in the ensemble.
He was like a named Republic Commando?
Yes.
Was he in one of these episodes?
That's wild.
Because there's commandos everywhere.
Yes, he's like Hemlock's right hand.
Is Scorch?
Oh.
So I'm so glad you talked about Hemlock's hand. Because his right hand is normal and his left hand has a black glove on it and he's always fidgeting with it. This was the other part of my thing about hands. And I know this one is less intriguing than a Crosshair's twitchy hand, but like, what's up with Hemlock's left hand? Did he get it cut off in one of these battles and I'm an idiot? Or is there like something that's going to happen there? Is it a droid hand? Is it like a monster hand? Is it like... a baby hand? Is it a baby Donald Trump hand?
I love the idea.
It could just be symbolism, counter symbolism or parallel symbolism with Crosshair, right? In terms of like...
That's pretty deep.
The hand of a killer. Yeah.
That or he's just a Bond villain. Like there's like he has to have something. And like he has got like severe like haircut. And his name's, for Hemlock. God's sake, Dr. Hemlock. It is a hat on a hat on a hat with this guy.
Yeah, his voice too, like the voice acting, it's so Bond villainy.
Yeah. I was googling around, the captain was Captain Man she was playing cards with, voiced by Harry Lloyd, who biggest role
from
was,
Dumb and Dumber. Just kidding.
No, that's I was like, that's really funny because I'm like, why does that sound familiar? That would be why that sounds familiar together. He played Viserys Targaryen on Game of Thrones. So,
oh my gosh, really?
Yeah, Emilia Clarke's brother, or you know, the Daenerys.
Oh wow,
Daenerys' brother. Seed.
Oh, with the crown of gold?
Does not make it out of season one. If I'm correct in my
or it's not the father from the Dance with Dragons series, is it?
No, I don't think so because he's young. He's the brother. He's
Viserys.
Viserys, whatever. Yeah, I can't. Viserys, I don't know. There's some V's and some Y's and some R's in there.
Okay.
Yeah. He's relatively young. Yeah. And Will Scarlet in the BBC's Robin Hood, which I heard was good, but never watched.
All right. Right on.
Yeah. Anyways, I almost want to keep discussing the VAT.
All right.
What do you got on the VAT, buddy?
No, we don't need to go back to that.
Yeah, we can always go
back to that. But I think we covered most of my notes here.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
I did want to talk about the gambler's fallacy. I guess I forgot about it there, but we just happened to have a conversation about it offline. But, you know, it's because there was gambling here, and I've seen things about this before. The gambler's fallacy is that it's like, oh, I've had good luck for a while, therefore I'm due bad luck. But that's not true.
Like
statistically, that has no grounds in reality.
Yep. Yes, I drunkenly tried to explain that to the people I was playing D&D with last night. It didn't make anything better.
Yeah,
no one wants to hear that while they're losing.
Luck has nothing to do with it. It's skill.
Yeah, it's the odds reset every time I roll my dice.
Yes, exactly.
I just also, as a side note, I was just laughing because while I was looking up who man was, I just clicked back to check in what was going on with chat, and Travis had a whole thing of like who he was, who he played, everything I just said. Travis,
he just had
chat.
Like the whole wiki,
so I'm like,
wiki page.
Like, I wasted my time. I had my fact checker right there.
And thank you, Travis. Sorry, sorry, we were slow on the uptake as usual. I blame the alcohol.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if Hemlock maybe like has some sort of virus that he had to fight with some sort of genetic treatment. It's a classic fantasy sort of like backstory for doctor characters, is that they had to fight a very infection.
I want him to have like a tentacle hand. Like, remember Dirge? I forget that they're called like the Gendai or something like that.
Right.
Like, he has like a Gendai hand grafted on, but it's like
he has the Dr. Hemlock and the Gendai hand. It might be the best like serial comic book sort of like,
and it's constantly trying to take over his body because it's still like a sentient hand and it's trying to like take over his mind.
But and that's similar, like I feel like probably the lowest hanging fruit of this is that, or like the Occam's razor, as we always like to say, is it, this is just a Dr. Strangelove reference, right, for all the movie nerds, right? It's the black hand who is the evil hand, right? I mean I don't think we're gonna get, I mean, give me a scene where he's trying to wrestle the hand away from something, like, and I'm like, just go full. But like, yeah, it's like, right, Dr. Strangelove, Dr. Hemlock, Dr. Strangelove has the black hand, gloved hand, gloves. You know, yeah.
Can that be the name of this episode, is Dr. Hemlock and the Gendai hand?
Yeah.
Because it's,
I mean, that's clearly our name.
I love it.
Also, let's start a punk band.
Like, hemlock, we know, is like, what, a poisonous?
Yeah, it's, right? it's a poisonous plant. Yeah.
Maybe he was poisoned. He had to fight a poison, a toxin, and his bloodstream.
Yeah.
There's carbon sickness. There's actual illnesses in Star Wars that they talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
all right. Well, so other notes I had, so that planet they were on was called Lao. Mm. That was cool. I love a new planet. I love a new planet. I heard,
what was the name?
Lao.
I love that. Okay,
yeah.
Great that's name.
Right. Yeah.
They had, so there was a lot of animals in this episode. We get a pet. I think there should be more pets in Star Wars for real all the time. Cinder is a good step in the right direction there in the higher public, but like there should be pets all the time because they could be so fun. But like I was listening to the sound design of the animals and they like mix in like familiar sounds. There's like a ton of tauntaun noises and there's a porg noise that happens. I don't know. I have notes about the sound design in this show and the score. I still think that, what's his name? The guy who scores this. I just blanked.
Kiner.
In the Kiner team. Like I know they have another gear. I just feel like they've been put on a leash and it's just like the edict is to like do kind of generic, score, but it's like, what happened to Leitmotif? You know what I mean? Like Kiner's, that was always the thing. It's like, if you're going to be like orchestral the whole time, give each of these characters their, especially the Bad Batch main characters, like give them their own theme. I was thinking about that when we, you know, the last scene of episode 4, we see Crosshair coming down the stairs. I was like, I want to hear the Crosshair theme right now.
Yeah. And it felt like generic Star Wars, like lifting.
The music was great.
It was good. It's always good.
It was actually very dark sidey, like the music that they played. It was like these low tone, like, you know, like contra bass sort of like low endy things. But it's like, no, like this is where like we should hear the story, his thing.
Yeah. The thing that we always hear.
You know, I mean, Ludwig did his own thing and Nick Pertell did his own thing and those are fantastic, but it's just like, I just feel like we're watering down Kiner's donation. It's like, if you're going to do the John Williams thing-ish, then let him make a leitmotif. Like, let this guy like put a proper finger.
Yeah, let him write some music as opposed to just like rearranging, right? Didn't he do the music for Ahsoka?
Yes. Yeah. He's done more Star Wars music than maybe any other person.
I feel like in Ahsoka, they did. They let him off the leash in terms of like, it doesn't have to be a orchestral, but for some reason, for the cartoons, they're like, you just have to do, you just have to remix John Williams. That's all you're allowed to do.
So I made that one playlist, right? It's called Star Wars Slaps, all caps. Check it out. But they, you know, in doing that, I listened to everything again. And like, actually, there is a leitmotif for Ahsoka now, and it's those Japanese drums with the sticks.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, click, 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 in Mandalorian, because if you listen to the theme that was created for her in Mandalorian, whatever, season two, episode,
four, probably right,
yeah, right in the middle,
episode five,
and like her like duel the Jedi with Morgan Elsbeth, that's where it started, and then Kiner picked it up and used it for this, and it's like he's like, which means like this guy can do anything, but like what does Kiner think about Star Wars? Like, I want to know what, like, let the man speak is what I'm saying. Well, like,
that's the thing. Like,
let the man cook.
Let the man cook, because it seems so safe.
But when you hear Williams, you know it's Williams. When you hear Goranson, you know it's Goranson. When you hear Pertell, you know it's Pertell. When you hear Kiner, it's like, is that Kiner, or is he just doing someone else's thing? And I know he's a really good musician. Like, that's the thing.
I
don't know. Have you guys listened to this with like AirPod Pros or with a sound system and sort of like really taken in the show? Because I think the music perfectly complements a lot of the scenes.
It does.
But to what you're saying, Ben, I do think the Bad Batch would benefit from some music that's shows a little bit more urgency and sort of like shows their combat prowess in a way that feels like, hyper real and sort of like perilous. Like they, and one wrong move basically could go sour, and you know, you got to, they have to have every move they do has to be done with a deft hand, and they basically are doing that, and it feels incredible. A lot of the times they'll just play like some triumphant sort of overture when they like beat up the bad guys, and I'm like, this is a little bit too kind of cartoonish and camp. I almost wish there was a little bit more of an edge to how they fight,
right? Because
and if you gave Crosshair that sort of music when he starts to, you know, present more urgency and dealing you know, in the moment using, you know, a blaster, it's like maybe that music starts to kick up, you know, it starts to come in.
Once you have a motif, you can play with it. It can be triumphant. It can be, it can be darker. You can like play with that theme to do a lot of different things within it. He can totally do that, but it just, I don't know. We've been spoiled, and I don't know. It's like the music is softer in, mix in Bad Batch and Ahsoka as compared to other things. I mean, you should hear how loud the music
is. I think it's really great. I do think the sound mixing, music, and sound design of the show is actually like top tier and sort of like some of the best stuff I've ever heard. Yeah. Like, watch Bad Batch with your AirPod Pros, with your headphones. It's incredible. It's just like seeing the animation and the sound is almost its own, you know, entity. Character, yes.
Silhouettes.
It's really, really important, really powerful, and this sort of stuff. Seeing Bad Batch on a big screen will be
incredible. But I'm telling you, the sound pressure level, like the dBs on like the score in Ahsoka and all the Kiner stuff, it's lower than Ludwig's and Nick Pertell's. And like I think that's intentional. I think they're like, no, we're doing the story, and this is the vibe that we're going for. And it's executed perfectly. My only thing is I want more Kiner. I want Kiner to just let the man cook and like write some themes and like let him do the stuff. And this is my own personal thing.
Because also it's Star Wars. Every character should have their own theme. Every main character should have their own theme.
Three seasons of Bad Batch. These guys are legendary characters. And like the music makes that real.
The other thing is like fascinating is like, could you imagine, like, you probably can because you both write music, but like this idea of like, so you have to write the theme for the Bad Batch, four clones who are clones, but they have slight distinct personalities. Like, isn't that a wonderful challenge for a composer to be like, so you just basically have to like give them, like, you have the first, like, you're
it could be one leitmotif that has like four variations,
four different variations that like, right, like,
and
that
it's would be subtle but it's like it could be pronounced and you could figure it out. Like, I think art is best when given tight parameters to like create within. I didn't mean to spend 10 minutes on that, but
no, that's awesome. Yeah, love it.
It's an interesting observation.
Yeah, because I think he's doing Bertell in this. Like, he's doing his like Bertell impression in this season. Like Nicholas Bertell, the guy that did the score for Andor, I think. But it's like a watered down version. It's like, just do your thing, man. You're good. You're really good.
Yeah, no, agreed. Yeah.
We don't want to waste his skills. And Crosshair said, you're wasting my skills to Omega. Like at the end, he's like, really, I could just kill everybody. That's like what I do. And she's like, no, 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 let's try it my way. And then they use his skills and they win. So thank goodness for Crosshair. Well, thank the Force.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff. Jimmy Simpson crushing as Dr. Hemlock too, the voice acting.
Yes. Yeah. Very lizard like, or very, very. I was trying to think what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
Oh, voice Palpatine?
Ian McDermott.
It was, yeah, the man.
Okay.
Yeah, it was the man himself. Yeah.
The man himself.
Yes, it was. Yes.
Again, you had to pause it as it flew by, which is wild to me.
Yeah.
That, like, you get Ian McDermott, like, you because they stop, because, like, you get a Dee Bradley Baker, you get, like, a stamp, you know, there. And, like, you would think you would do major guest voices as a stamp. And then, like, not like everyone else, but everyone else is a quick, here's everyone else. It blocks. It's weird to me.
Yeah, indeed.
So good. This is such a fun show. Mm-hmm. The lighting, the animation, it's just like firing up cylinders. Yeah. They've really found the style it's really good.
It's also a show where, like, sometimes I, having gone through, like, the Marvel years of Netflix, where I'm like, this show would be great. It did not need to be 12 episodes long. Why is it 12 episodes long? Like, Daredevil would have been amazing if it was 8 episodes long.
Right.
Where I kind of have, I know, like, Ben, you're like, more is better, more. And I'm more like, you know what? 8 episodes, that's good. That I like it. Like, it makes you tell stories, like, thoughtfully sometimes. I mean, it depends on it, but I love that we're varying the stuff. And when you tell me it's 15, 16 episodes per season for The Bad Batch, I think it needs it. It works. Like, I'm like,
they're
like,
short episodes, like, too. They're short. 20 to 30 minutes.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Same amount of storytelling, just, you know, broken into half episodes.
It grinds my gears a little. I'm like, give me 45 minutes of a Star Wars at minimum. You know, I want to really have something to sink my teeth into.
So I think we're going to get that at least once a season, because I was looking at the last two season one, season two, 16 episodes.
Yeah.
So this is 15 episodes, because I bet you episode 15 is a double episode. So, I bet you that's 45 minutes long.
I like crane back. I was going to start from season one, episode one, and that was an hour and 15 minutes. Season one, episode one of.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, so you can do this. You know, it's all up to the thing. But I'm just saying, it's like, it's tough to, like, wait a whole week and then have 25 minutes of content.
I do wonder if there's something cyclical with Kanan, you know?
Kanan Jarrus?
Yeah.
Caleb Doom?
Yeah.
He could come back in right at the very end,
right? Because the opening image usually mirrors at the
very
end.
Very true. Very true. Didn't think about that.
Ooh, I love that call, Grant.
Yeah,
and it would be the Force, right? It would be the Force throwing making them cross paths again. I always think about the cosmic Force.
Yes,
the serendipitous aspects of the Force.
Yeah, because are we? So he would still be young, right? Like, we're still.
He's dead.
Wait.
But I think you were.
No, he's not. He's not dead.
No.
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, you're.
He's still very young.
He's still very young. He's only been like a couple of years.
He's still like a teenager. Okay.
Yeah, so he's probably out there like hiding, not, you know, hiding his Force abilities, but still, yeah.
Sorry, my synapses got crossed there for a second. I was like, what?
Dead. The timeline stuff's hard. It's hard to remember which era we in.
Like, I think fans would pop for Kanan Jarrus.
That's a good call, Grant. I never thought about that, but yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be really fun. I'd love to see some more Jedi and some more cameos, and that's always fun for me. You know, not gratuitously so, but it'd be nice to see another Jedi. Like, I mean,
off world.
Yeah, I mean, Asajj Ventress is kind of the coolest pull you can make.
That's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a blast.
But gaming that out, like, why would she be in? I know there's been a lot of fan theories that she's the one that is part of this necromancer project or something, given that she's dead at this point in the timeline. Yeah.
Go ahead, Ben.
Sorry, I'm just going to, real quick, I'm sticking with my call from last week that she's here to train Omega in the Force.
Yeah, it could be.
In the ways of
definitely,
the Force.
It definitely could be.
Okay, all right.
They've pretty clearly stated that this works in canon, right? Like they're respecting, and not in the way like they kind of did that with Ahsoka, the Ahsoka book, which was kind of like, I don't know about that. I feel like you're just kind of selling me on a bill of goods, and it felt a little like they were, when they would say that, it felt very like they knew.
Yeah.
They were full of it. And it's, even at the beginning of Bad Batch with the Kanan stuff, they seem to kind of just be like, yeah, but that was a comic book and whatever.
Yeah.
And this, they seem to be very much more, no, we promise you, all going to make sense and you're fine. So I feel like that makes sense. The Project Necromancer stuff. It's kind of seems to be the only way you can do to honor new or the honor the why can it Ben name of the book? Books gone in my brain. I can picture
Dark Disciple. Dark Disciple.
Oh, we got there. The Dark Disciple.
There it is. Oh, goodness. Goodness gracious. I mean, that's the fun part about being an alcohol fueled podcast. The words come, but you know, not on time. Well,
on that note,
we're doing our very best.
I covered all my notes. That really was, it really was what who's in the vat and sort of, what's the fate of Crosshair and the team? That's about it.
What's the deal with Omega's blood? I mean, it seems like she does not necessarily have the Force, but it's more like deep Star Wars science, which never happens. Like her blood is a conduit for cloning, and it's an essential thing.
Can I make a theory that would be just really just monumental for me? But it's total fan theory. Tune out if you don't want to hear anything that's possible.
No, we hate fun, Grant.
You just met with great elation, I hope, by everyone. If you could tie Omega to like the High Republic in a cool way, where this is a big theory, this is a big sort of like philosophical talking point.
The big swing.
Maybe we should just get into this real quick, but like Project Necromancer seems to be the preservation of life at, you know, after death via the dark side and dark science.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think the Kaminoans were experimenting with this in terms of either a total, you know, a centricity to it, or a sort of like light side, you know, design process, in which like they probably experimented with just Jedi, and probably to me it just felt like Omega sort of shares some qualities with a certain Jedi from the High Republic era. And even in that first episode, you see her wearing a sort of tiara or headpiece.
Yeah,
that it's super reminiscent of a headpiece we've also seen a Jedi wear in the High Republic era. And that Jedi is none other than
Avart Kriss.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So this is my theory is
she is a clone of Avart Kriss.
Yeah.
No, I'm just saying they're harvested a sort of M count genetic sequencing from Avart Kriss in some way. And that
would be fire. That would be fire.
That's my theory, but I don't know. I'm just gonna throw that out there.
Has like anyone other than Omega and the Bad Batch stated that she is a clone of Jango, right? Or is that something that we are just like, this is gonna be one of those things of just like, no one said this.
No,
you all were assuming.
She's just like, you're a clone, I'm a clone, we're related. And like it seems like Dr. Carr is like, and like, you know, Nala Se is like,
you're a clone. You're 100% a clone. And
yeah, the 99s are like, but like you have a New Zealand accent, and that's the only thing we have in common. You know, no one explicitly said you are you come from Jango Fett.
Let's also be clear. Accents are not genetic, right? So the only reason she has that, accent is because she grew up around
a million Tamora Morrisons,
by a person who I, which is also where they should all sound like Kaminoans, but I guess because probably the only person they were speaking to was Jango Fett, was their trainer, right? And they all then taught each other, and then whatever.
Yeah. I don't want
to pull on that thread because it's starting to come apart real quick. But like, so I think that's part of the thing. Is like, I kind of love that idea, Grant, because they're like, we never said that, and like.
Yeah,
dude. Accents aren't genetic, so you just put all these things together and assume she was a clone of Jango, because that's a logical assumption when you think about it. But like, never said. That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing if this turns like, Avart Kriss. Yeah, and just an Avart Kriss clone. Which why not?
Maybe not. Or maybe just a vague sort of reference.
Yeah.
Maybe the best parts of Avar Chris, the best parts of Jango Fett, like, you know.
Right. Like a splicing sort of situation.
And they're like, oops, it worked. Well, we better hold on.
Yeah, but it worked. So let's hide this immediately because it's not dark science.
And just say she's a clone. She's an altered clone or whatever.
It's not just corrupt math science. It's actually just there's a level of purity to just experimenting with sort of a Jedi of such, you know, light and sort of the sort of.
She also should be a brunette. It's weird.
Oh, dude, I'm so glad you said this. Yeah. How many more of these are you keeping in your pocket, Greg? Because this is like, that made my night.
No, that's
that made my night.
To me, I just think that would really like cover the entire web of the canon that they're exploring right now and sort of be this really fun reveal.
Travis is on board.
Travis is on board?
Yeah,
all right.
That's why I said hear it, because I feel like it's, to me, it would be like, I would pop out of my seat on the couch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would do a knee slide across the floor and like fist pump the air.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Exactly. It would be so fascinating because you could easily do that storytelling of just like, yes, you're the clone of a long dead Jedi, right? You know, and you name it.
So cool.
And so like you could do it in a way that like you don't need like you wouldn't say Avar Chris because like the majority of your big, I don't know what that is, but like but the rest of us would, right? Yeah. They would just throw up her picture in Orabesh, and then that would just be like all the nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Lose their mind.
Yeah. See a little bit of her.
Yeah. And I mean, for anyone else, that would be a cool story.
They could do something with like music too. I mean, because she was like a music based force wielder. And it's like, you know, they haven't done much with music, but like, what if she is put in the right situation where she's in, like at a live concert of like whatever and like something stirs within her? Like that could actually awaken the force in her or something. Like, that would be enough to be like, all right.
Dang. I love it. I love this.
Not what I would do, but it's what I would do. You know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just cool. I don't know. That's just so cool.
Yeah.
To me. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be great. I'm on board. You know, I wasn't there early. I was there early on Crosshair's Redemption, so don't you all forget about that.
You were 100% there. Yeah, yeah.
But
that's why I think the vat maybe needs to be Palpatine, because I almost want it to be like he's too selfish to like try to use another body or something like that. It's just going to be himself.
He just wants to be Plo Koon like so bad.
It's the difference between Omega and what he's doing is that Omega is this sort of like, you know, a search for this sort of genetic sequencing, but using just a Jedi of the light side. You know?
They're all Mace Windus. Oh man.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Palpatine's like terrified of Mace Windu because Mace Windu almost got
him.
But
he could become Mace Windu and like inhabit Mace Windu's form. Like I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there because like Mace Windu is the only one who got the better of him, and I bet that sticks in his craw.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even though I'm sure he declared victory immediately after that.
But aren't we just remaking the movie Get Out?
Yes, we are.
Okay. All right. Just saying.
Yeah.
But not. I mean. Pretty good movie.
Remaking what?
Get Out. Talking about the old white male being put into a black body. Like I'm saying, it's Get Out.
that would be the Get Out of Star Wars.
Spoiler alert for Get Out. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we did it for this week, y'all. Sorry we took a week off there. But we're grateful to be back and talking about Bad Batch. We'll be back soon to have another episode on episode 5 of The Bad Batch and what other news springs up. Plus, we have a couple other things in the work. We might have a guest on the pod, actually, which would be kind of fun to talk about some new things going on.
Can't wait to talk to him, Jason.
Yeah, yeah. If y'all are down, you know, we could have, we're thinking about having Jason on to talk about Star Wars Unlimited. We're going to have a bunch of fun things in the pipeline coming up.
Yeah, and we got comics and books that we got to figure out we want to cover, so we'll talk about
I'm jonesing for High Republic right now. I can't wait to read more High Republic.
So the young adult novel is coming out this Tuesday, the Defy the Storm.
Yep.
So we're still one back. We got the Escape from Valor, which is like the junior, like the middle school reader.
Yeah.
So we should cover those in a few weeks. Like I think we could do a Bad Batch in a book in a night.
I think we can too. Well, as long as it's not a double batch.
Yeah.
A batch of batches.
Exactly. Yeah, so maybe in a couple of weeks. Yeah, a few weeks. Yeah, love it.
All right. Well, awesome. Thanks, everyone, for listening to us this week. We can't wait to talk to you again next week. Saddle up, get a beer, and join us at the Cantina for
Cantina Chronicles.